Zounds, gadzooks, and odds bodikins. We're talking Rudolph's Shiny New Year. Hit it. It was 1984. Apple's infamous 1984 ad was released. The beauty queen killer was captured and killed. Breakfast TV started in the UK, and Rudolph's Crazy Island Adventure was once again back on TV. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now joining me is a very special guest. You'll know him as a host of the Way Awesome Weird Christmas podcast, Craig Kringle. Craig, how's it going?
Going great. Great to be on here too. So, and I'm impressed that you found a way to get this thing that was made in the 70s into the 80s. So that was a nice move. I was wondering, how are we going to make this happen? But you got it already. So well done.
Yeah, when you suggested this one, and I like to give a little bit of a transitional year leeway. Mm-hmm. So I go from 77 to 93.
Yeah.
But this is 76.
Just the long decade. That's what they do, right? They call it the long decade.
That's exactly right. This year feels like a long decade already. So I thought, well, 76. Okay. So I thought, and I know I remembered seeing it, you know, when it aired in the 80s. And so I looked it up, and sure enough, in 1984 on the Disney Channel, it was reintroduced, and because it originally aired on ABC. And it was just that one year, 76. So in 84, it was reintroduced on the Disney Channel, and it ran all that way until, I believe, 97. So
it, awesome. You
know, it was there for the rest of the 80s.
Awesome. And it kind of actually has a bit of an 80s vibe. I don't know why. Maybe we can figure that out by the end of this talk. But something about it feels 80s to me, even though I can't put my finger on it, though.
You know, the 80s were pretty wacky and zany, and the special itself is pretty wacky and zany. So I think...
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of bright colors. Like they go to all the different islands, and each one is kind of like a really bright color, is a little neon color. That's kind of not the actual, but it's like their characters. Yeah, so like neon in your face. There's maybe that's it.
Well, I could definitely see it at home with, like, you know, Transformers and Voltron and all that kind of stuff as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got that kind of out there vibe, and it's got the main character that you root for, but he's also kind of got a little supporting team. So to me, it fits perfectly with those Saturday morning cartoons, especially of the Hanna-Barbera type.
Yeah. Yeah. And they go to all the different islands, which could be sort of like, you know, each little playset. So it's like each one could be a commercial for a new line of toys that you got to get. Like, you got to get the 1776 guys. You got to go back and get the Fairy Tale Land guys. And yeah. Got to get the dinosaurs from.
I would definitely want the dinosaurs, and I would definitely want the 1023 folks. But yep. I don't know if I'd really be into the 1776 ones, honestly, as a kid. But you know how that goes. So what's your general, like, history, or what are your, like, just thoughts about this one in general?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't remember seeing this when it originally aired. Like, I don't remember it from a kid as being, okay. Or I don't remember it as a kid. What I do remember is one of the first Rankin Bass collections that I got. It was one of the, like, B-sides or one of the, like, third or fourth discs that was in the thing. And one of my older kid just liked it. And so we would kind of have it on repeat a lot. So it's more my child's childhood memory than mine. But he liked it, but it never made sense. Like, of all the, like, I love Rankin Bass because they're all fever dreams in one way or another. Like, they're all just follow this all weird, surreal thing. But this one in particular, like, as I was watching it again for this, I realized, like, even particular scenes, like, they don't really worry about things making sense, like, from sentence to sentence. It's just like, and then the wind stopped and he dropped and he landed in the new land. And you're like, okay, cool. You know, I was even checking, like, was this based on some old storybook or something? Because I know, like, Year Without a Santa Claus was based on a storybook. And I was like, well, did they get this? But nope, this one was Romeo Muller, who completely wrote a whole bunch of them. It was all him.
Completely his imagination.
Yeah, and it goes in. It's not just the overall plot, but even sometimes if you're looking at it, just like, how do you get from scene to scene? It is just random jumps of illogic, and it's beautiful.
You know, it's funny. I have the making of Rudolph, the book that their official biographer, Rick Goldschmidt, came out with. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, it's got the first draft of the original script of Rudolph. And you can see where they've made notes. Like, he's scratched out several lines and just added different things here and there. So I would be really interested to see what like an original version of this script looked like, and if it made more sense and they just cut things for time or not.
Right. I was even wondering, like, did they just have a bunch of models from like a medieval and a fairy tale thing? And then they were going to do a July 4th thing. And they're like, you know what? We have all these things that we made for like a little pilot or something, and we got to get them into something and use it. So let's come up with some story and get Rudolph in there again, because he sells. Yep. And, you know, let's just cobble all this stuff together so that we can use it. Because it is kind of like you get, like we were talking about, because the story, if you don't remember the story, Rudolph has to save the baby New Year. Yep. And to do that, he goes to the archipelago, awesome word, the archipelago of lost time, which is where every island is like its own year, where the old year goes to retire or whatever. But each one is its own theme. And so you've got like the July 4th land, you've got an old dinosaur land, which is the prehistoric thing. You've got fairy tale land, which that's another weird one to me, like thinking of things that don't make sense. It starts off and they're like the year 1023, which they always say is like 10 to 3.
10 like to instead 3, of, yeah.
Right, which I remember having watched this forever with my kid and never really watching it, like just listening to it.
Yeah.
And then being like, oh, 10 to 3. No, that's 1023, but they always call it like a time joke. I don't know. That's what counts as an inner joke or something.
They try to cram like as much time humor as they can in here.
Right.
Yeah, all the puns and all sorts of things like that. Yeah.
Right. And so that's one where they're saying, okay, now this is a history thing where the year 1023 is all the medieval stuff, but it's not medieval. It's fairy tales. And it's not even like old fairy tales. Like there's the Three Little Pigs, which is like building your house out of like, you know, wood and straw and definitely a kind of, you know, early American vibe or something. There's Little Miss Muffet. So
I think Cinderella that one makes a cameo.
Cinderella's there. Yep. Now she would fit in the sort of medieval thing. Mm-hmm. Like she could handle that. But there's the Three Bears who maybe, but who else do they show? There's the Seven Dwarves. I guess Snow White and the Seven Dwarves.
Yeah,
them though. That one's very economical because they're only looking through the window.
I think we got them all actually.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm. Little Red Riding Hood. There we go.
Oh, that's right, Little Red Riding Hood. So yeah, so they say it's fairy tale land, but yeah, that one goes in different directions. That's where I mean how it's kind of surreal. Like even their own little rules for this world, they don't necessarily have to follow.
No, they don't jive. Because then you go to, you know, 1776 and it's like completely, you know, or not completely, but you know, it's very historical.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It just doesn't quite make sense with this fairy tale land that they create. But I guess if we can believe that, you know, there's a reindeer that talks that can fly and all that, why not throw in that kind of a, I don't know.
Yeah. I love too when he lands on 1776 and he gets caught on a kite and he goes down and you're like, oh, cool, it's Ben Franklin. And he's like, I'm 1776. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I thought you were Ben Franklin. But
and then they call him Sev, you know, Sev the rest of the time. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. Same thing. I loved the knight, you know, Sir 1073, especially because he's played by the Riddler, you know, Frank Gorshin.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of really cool. But I always loved his look with, you know, the long beard that just doesn't quite
fit. Sticking out of his helmet, yeah, somehow, yeah.
Yeah, yep. To me, that was always really neat. But then again, you go to the 1 million BC, and he's there with dinosaurs. So, I mean, first of all, there were people that, you know, so there's that little anachronism there. But yeah, I mean, it's one that you're right. It's completely bonkers. And it's just, but it's fun. Something about it is
fun.
Kind of fun.
It's still fun. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun in a surreal way. Like definitely surreal. But yeah, the other, like, and as far as breaking rules, the one other thing I remembered is part of the thing that gets the story going is Rudolph is riding on a boat to the archipelago. And then the evil bird who's trying to steal the baby the Eon the Terrible.
Eon, yeah.
Is going to come down and like get him on his boat or something. And it's like set up as this really dangerous moment where if he crashes the boat, then Rudolph's going to drown. But Rudolph can fly.
Rudolph can fly, yeah. It really does.
And so, but instead then a giant whale comes and saves Rudolph and lets him ride on him. But yeah, it's like for that part, they forgot that he could fly. And then there's another one where they're like climbing up a mountain and Rudolph could have just flown up.
You know, but it kind of makes me wonder. So to get to the archipelago, because it's kind of like, you know, this lost yesterdays or whatever, do they have to sail there? You know, is it kind of like, you know, like the Undying Lands in Middle Earth, you know, where you have to sail there?
Right.
I don't know.
I think you're already thinking a few steps ahead of this. They would, but
yeah, well, I think we're already putting, yeah, we're definitely putting much more thought than they did into this.
But yeah, I liked it. And a lot of the songs are catchy. I mean, I have to admit they're catchy in a way that all of Rankin Bass songs are. Mm-hmm. The ways that they Maury shouldn't Laws, be.
He like, did a good job with these.
You know, you're thinking these are songs that are just kind of cheese. And yet in the back of my head for like all day long, I've been have a happy new year, you know? So it's, I'm screwed for the next week.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man, but thanks for coming on anyway. Yeah. For me, this is one that, I remember seeing bits and pieces of it, but then I completely forgot about it, you know? And so it wasn't until about, I don't know, 7 years ago or so that I found it. It was one of those extra that they just kind of threw in on a Rankin Bass collection. Mm-hmm. And I put it in and, you know, I remembered the dinosaurs and I remembered the little baby with the hat on, but that was really all that I remembered from the whole special. And as I'm watching it, I remember thinking, this is odd, but I couldn't like stop watching it. And so now, of course, we watch it every New Year. So New Year's Eve or like a couple of days.
That's cool.
My kids will watch it with me and they really enjoy it. So
that's good.
Yeah.
And my kids don't watch it with me anymore. They were all for this stuff when they were little. Now when I put them on, because I still love all the Rankin Bass things, and yeah, they'll watch some of them. Like they like Year Without a Santa Claus and Santa's Come Into Town. But as soon as I get into any of the B-sides, they're like, nah, we're gone. We're out. Like, can't handle Leprechaun's Christmas Gold again. We just can't do it, Dad. So same for this one, I think.
I think out of all of them, that one is definitely one of the more rough specials, at least for me, the Leprechaun's Christmas Gold. I mean, the link to Christmas is very tenuous.
Tenuous at best, yeah. So now I sit there and watch those, and they're like, what does this have to do with anything? And I'm like, that's amazing. Yeah. That's the best thing right there. Like, what does a harpy have to do with Christmas? Like, nothing. That's why it's so amazing.
That's why it's awesome, yeah. Which kind of fits the ethos of your show.
Right, yeah, yeah. So, but that's also when my family checks out, and they're like, yeah, we're off.
I hear you. We're gonna do something. Not to derail this too much, but I know when I invited you on, you had suggested doing The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. And, you know, at the time I had already covered it, unfortunately. But where does that rank in your Rankin Bass, you know?
Canon? Oh, that's up there. I mean, honestly, I think Year Without a Santa Claus is still my favorite thing. But after that, it's Life and Adventures.
Nice. Like,
yeah. And that one I do remember seeing kind of as a kid, because I can remember it came on one time when my family was getting ready to go do something and it came on, and this was right around the time when I was starting to read Tolkien, you know, very young and all this kind of stuff. And so you hit all the weird fairies and the, you know, it's a total sort of pagan version of the Santa Claus story. And I really wanted to pay attention, but we had all this other stuff to do. And so I was like, you know, having to go get clothes, and then I'd come back in and watch for a minute and just be totally fascinated. And then we had to go. And I don't remember exactly how old I was, but because it was like exactly the kind of thing that I wanted to watch, and because I also couldn't pay attention to it at the time, I actually went for a couple years feeling like I had dreamed it or imagined it, that there was this like weird fantasy pagan version of the Santa Claus story out there. But that was before, you know, way before the internet.
Before
any of this was on, like it only came out on VHS, like, like what, 15 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. Even
like, you know, like at the very end of the VHS period, it came out. And so I had been convinced that I had dreamed it for a long time until it came on when I was a teenager. And I remember feeling like, this is, yes, I'm vindicated. And there are other people out there in the world who like this as much as me. And that's when I realized I had no idea that that was Frank Oz's story. Not Frank Oz. L. Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz, which is why my brain did Frank Oz. So, and then I immediately went and got the book and loved the book and found out all about it. But no, so that one's still my favorite, both sentimentally, but also because it had that weird mystery around it forever of me not knowing if it was real or not.
That's another one that I remember seeing, like when I was young. I remember seeing the Santa when he was young and he's kind of got that like brownish, you know, tan beard. And then I didn't really remember anything else about it until I saw it again years later. And it's definitely, it's pagan, it's crazy, but I love it. I mean, it hits all those fantasy notes that I need. And because I'm a big Tolkien fan as well, you know, and all that kind of, you know, science fiction fantasy stuff. So, I mean, that one's great. And of course the production design is just amazing in that one as well. Yeah. A little bit better than in this special that we're covering today, but
there are some cool things
that I enjoyed, like the design of Eon the Terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know he's supposed to be like a vulture, but every time I see him, I always think of one of those, like a rock, you know, ROC.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The mythical creature.
Because he's got that giant bulbous beak, right? And with a little mole or something on the front of it. Like, I think that's what it's supposed to be.
I think
which is, again, weird logic. Like, a beak shouldn't grow a mole, but nonetheless, there it is.
It's Rankin Bass. Anything goes, man.
I know.
you nutshelled it really well earlier. Essentially, Rudolph has to find the new baby New Year, or else the next year won't come.
Right.
And while he's doing that, the evil vulture tries to stop him because this is like his very last moment of life.
Right. So the one thing we didn't say though was why the baby is missing and why he's run away.
We didn't explain
that part.
No, you're right. And it's because he has ginormous ears. And so every time people see his ears, they just break out in laughter. And he gets very self-conscious for a baby, and he runs away.
Yeah. So that's one of those things where you wonder if they would make that would get made now. Like, because would that be taken too much as making fun of people with deformities or something like that? You know, I don't know how it goes. I mean, they do tie it well to Rudolph in the end, right? Because that's how Rudolph finally convinces him. He's like, hey, people used to laugh at me and wouldn't let me play their reindeer games. But... but he gets in there. But it is kind of funny how, like, I love how, like, cruel everybody is. Like, whenever he takes his hat off, like, nobody takes even a half second to stop and, like, hide their laughter. Like, everybody in this thing is just full on, ha, 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 that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Your ears are amazingly huge.
Which is funny because he's got, like, this great big blonde, you know, afro, essentially. Mm-hmm. Just this big, you know, mane of curly blonde hair. And it really, it kind of even hides the fact that his ears stick out a little bit. So if he didn't have so much hair, I wonder what they'd really do.
But no, it struck me watching it this time, like how nobody was censoring their own reaction. Like there wasn't even nobody who sees it even ever attempts to even hide it. Like even the nice, like mother bear of the three bears, like she's just pointing and laughing like from the get go. Everybody reacts that way. Yeah.
But this is one of my pet peeves, essentially, where continuity, because, you know, different companies paid for these different specials. And so a lot of it is like, you know, retroactive continuity and things like that, or they hadn't planned on making things connect. And then they all of a sudden create a new story and hey, it's connected. But it starts off with Rudolph again, young, you know, so at the end of the very first one, he's got the full grown antlers and everything. He's eight. But for some reason, he's back to just being a younger Rudolph.
Yep.
I mean, I know why externally, but internally, that's never given any logic. So my own little comic booky fantasy brain likes to think of it as like a multiverse. And so in this particular universe, he didn't quite age before, but that's the only way I can get around it.
Yeah. I remember the thing that bugged me about that too was not just the physical difference, but this is like the way they tell the story. This is like the night after he gets back from his first trip, right? It's the very first time he's led Santa. And now all of a sudden he's like the most competent creature in the world that we're now going to entrust you know, saving time itself too, right?
Right.
It's like Santa sends him off to do this too, where you're like, well, wasn't he supposed to still be like young and nervous and scared? But I guess the one, all he needed was Santa to believe in him, and off he goes on his own to face down a personification of endless time or something like that.
And, yeah. Of man's fear of death.
Exactly. That's what Eon the Terrible is. I
guess. That's really what he is.
Empty ongoing time. Yeah. So, and Red Skelton is like the nice version of the friendly old death. Cause I love, he's all nice and kind and everything, but he's carrying a scythe the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like he's got the figure of death, and he's carrying his side the whole time. He's talking about all this sweet little stuff.
So. Yeah. And I guess when he retires, he takes all the people from that year that have passed or, I mean, I don't know how that works.
I don't know. And they go off to live in the island of 1976 or whatever it was. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. Which is also strange, but I think the reason Rudolph was chosen was because it was still very foggy from that night. And so he was the only one that could actually travel and kind of see what was going on.
Gotcha.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know what else it could be. But so Santa Claus, he gets a letter from Father Time saying that the new baby Happy, baby New Year, is missing. And so Santa sends Rudolph on this quest to go, you know, retrieve him. Mm-hmm. And I really like it because on the way he meets like all of Father Time's henchmen, I suppose, mm-hmm. or minions. I don't know what you want to call them. But I mean, you get like General Ticker, who's like a clock, but you know, it's kind of military-esque. Mm-hmm. And the Great Quarter Past Five, who's this camel.
Who's my favorite. I wish he was there in the whole thing. But
he was really cool. I liked him. He was a great design. Again, the timepiece like right in his hump, you know, it was nice.
And he has this sort of jaded attitude where everything's kind of funny to him, like, which I think is cool. I just like the way they did him.
Yeah. Well, and then Rudolph even wants to like call him, like shorten his name, you know, to make it easier. And he's like, I'd rather you didn't.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So just a good bit there. There's a lot of good bits. But then we get, let's see, the name of that whale. I have it written down here.
Oh, it's Big Ben.
Big Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
And he's got a big clock on his tail.
Exactly. Which, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's never really explained. He's just like a whale with a clock on his
tail. I'm assuming he kind of works for Father Time.
Right.
Just because he's got a clock in him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what else to think about that. But there's all these really cool things. And so Rudolph, he travels, you know, the sands of time and makes it to Father Time's place. And he kind of gives him the lowdown on what's, you know, baby Happy and all that. And so he says, all right, we kind of think he's going to the archipelago, and go ahead, go follow him, please.
Take it.
Need him. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Otherwise, you know, next year won't come, but watch out, cause there is a giant vulture bird that's, you know, going to die when the new year comes. Cause he can only live for an eon, hence his name, and it ends this year. So watch out for that too. I really enjoyed his design. Yeah. He didn't, I mean, I wish he was a little more menacing as well.
Like, yeah,
I would have liked to just a little more, you know, like maybe sharper talons or something. I don't know, just anything to make him just a little more fierce, I think would have really added to it.
He does kind of have a creepy screech at least. But yeah, when you actually see him, his face is all round and bulbous and things. And so he looks more kind of goofy than really terrifying. But
yeah,
sounds pretty bad.
Well, and I think that's why he kind of fits with, or, you know, why I said he kind of fits with like the Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of got that style. And I know Paul Coker Jr., you know, is the one that actually designed all these guys. Mm-hmm. He's a cool dude. I got to meet him a few years ago.
Oh, cool.
Really neat. But, you know, it's just, it does have that kind of Mad Magazine feel to it, you know, that style.
And yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I wish it was just a little bit more fierce, but I get it. It's for kids and, you know, let's tone it down a bit, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is riding on that boat. Eon attacks, but he's saved by Big Ben, and he continues on his journey. And that's where he gets to that first island, which is 1 million BC, where he meets O.M.
O.M.
The caveman. Find out that Happy was there, but he took off his hat and some dinosaurs laughed at him. And again, he got self-conscious, right. So he split.
So O.M., though, I wonder what you think about like the way they did his character, because he's kind of this weird, ironic, like I couldn't decide if he was like unsure of himself, because his one sort of character tick he always has is after everything he says, he goes, yes, no. Mm-hmm. And as if he's like never quite sure of what he's saying. I couldn't decide exactly what that was about. Like I don't know. Like that was the one thing that felt weird enough that I didn't even really know what they were going for.
Yeah. He one. Definitely.
Like, why did the 1 million guy, why did he have to be so uncertain of himself all the time? See, I don't know.
I don't know why they didn't just make him grunt a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, you think caveman, you think like, you know, grunts and growls and,
yeah,
you know, just basic vocalizations. And I think that would have gotten the job, but they kind of, I mean, he's weird. He's really quirky, and it doesn't quite fit with the caveman vibe. And I don't know if they were going for that duality kind of a thing where he's, yeah, a little more advanced for a caveman,
yeah,
or what, but yeah,
he does have what is my favorite song from the show though. It's Raining Sunshine. That is my favorite one. Just because it's the whole point is that it's kind of, it doesn't make sense. It's, I mean, it does make sense, but it's illogical and kind of like Lewis Carroll kind of way, but it fits really well for the show. And mm-hmm. That's the one that, you know, that and the Happy New Year that I'll have stuck in my head forever.
And he was played by Maury Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
People will probably know from the Dick Van Dyke show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, at least that's how I know him, really. I don't really know him from anything else. But
the one guy's voice, though, the voice actor that really gets me is Paul Frees, just because he was in so many of their things. And mm-hmm. especially because I rewatched I watched the video version of their version of The Hobbit many times. And he does a bunch of the iconic voices in there. And so anytime I hear Burgermeister Meisterburger, who he does, or you know, these guys that he does in here, because he does quite a few of them in this one. I think.
I mean, he's even Santa in quite a, I mean, he's Santa in this one as well.
Yeah.
But in the Frosty special, he's Santa. In Here Comes Peter Cottontail, he's Santa.
Yeah.
In what's that other one? The First Easter Rabbit, he's Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's even like one more. But I mean, so he does that, although I think he's mostly known, at least for Rankin Bass, as villains.
Yeah, you
know, like Kubla Kraus and
mm-hmm.
and Jack Frost and things like that.
Yep.
But I mean, his voice is so iconic, and I'm glad you brought up The Hobbit, because there are a couple of things here and there that reminded me of The Hobbit, but mostly that style, you know, that design that they use in The Hobbit. It, when I think of Rankin Bass 2D, you know, the traditional mm-hmm. cell animation, mm-hmm. I think of that particular style.
Yeah,
and you can see bits of it in Twas the Night Before Christmas, and mm-hmm. even in the animated parts towards the end of this special.
Yeah.
When, you know,
yeah,
when
which is another weird thing where they decided to do a cartoon version of the Rudolph story rather than show their own Rudolph story, but whatever.
And again, I think that might have to do with rights, but honestly, it's strange because, I mean, why throw it in? I think the only reason was because they needed a famous song and they didn't have a song to go with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Frosty's Winter Wonderland, you know, there's Winter Wonderland is the one there. And I mean, all these ones are based off of songs. And I think in this one, they just didn't have a song, like a famous song to be like the linchpin. So they're just saying, well, let's reuse Rudolph.
Yeah. Yeah. And it works. It's also another weird moment where Father Todd, that's because the whole point of that is Rudolph is going to tell his story to the baby mm-hmm. New Year, but then he says he's too modest to tell his own story. So the leaves and the snowflakes decide to tell Rudolph's story for him, and that gets us into the montage. And
I thought that was very odd.
It's a really weird moment right there too. But yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like that just, they don't make sense, but you're watching it and you just kind of go with it. And mm-hmm. you know, it's one of those where it's like a story that someone's telling you, and you just kind of nod your head and smile.
Yeah,
and yeah. That's like the equivalent of it, I think. But yeah. So 1 million BC, the next island they go to is that 1023. Although we kind of off screen, you see that they've gone to 4000 BC, mm-hmm. 1893, 1492, I think.
Yeah.
1965.
Right. Which they said was too noisy, right? Is that what they say? Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. But I kind of really would have liked to have seen some of those, honestly.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, 65. Like, it would have been cool to see a 70s version of the 60s.
Of the 60s, right? Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
But yeah, exactly, their vision of it. But I kind of, I'm really interested in that 4000 BC. Like, would it have been like the Egyptians or...
Yeah. Is that the one where they say they were too obsessed with pyramids or something?
So.
Is that the one they say? Yeah. Because it's like all these ones that they do in passing. It's all the reasons why they'd never seen Baby Happy. Yeah. And one of them is they're obsessed with the pyramids. Mm-hmm. 1492, they're too obsessed with discovering things.
Discovery, yeah. but that's when we get to Sir 1023 or Sir 1023, however you want to say it. And he is, I mean, he's just really cool. But anytime you're, you know, the Riddler is your voice, I mean, I think you, there's something special there. I always loved Frank Gorshin. Of course, my first experience with him was the 1966 Batman, but my wife introduced me to That Darn Cat. I don't know if you remember that, mm-hmm. that Disney
yep.
one. And mm-hmm. he's one of the villains in that.
And oh, wow.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Hadn't even noticed. And I mean, he's playing, you know, like a downright guy. He wants to kill mm-hmm. this old lady and, you know, things like that. And so, I mean, he's really cool. He's got some range. And so even in this, you can kind of see he's got this, you know, fair, happy. And he's this projecting voice.
Oh, yeah.
He elongates his syllables. And I mean, it's almost sing-songy, but also like he's trying to be as brave as he can. Mm-hmm. And something about his voice. There's definitely an affectation there.
Oh, yeah.
And I really dug it.
Yeah, it fits the whole kind of idea of a knight as somebody who's playing out the role very carefully and everything's sort of ceremonial all the time. Yeah.
And of course, OM, for some reason, decides to accompany Rudolph. So now there's, you know, Rudolph, a caveman, talking about this knight.
Yep.
And so they go about it and they discover all these other fairy tales. You know, I think even Humpty Dumpty comes out.
Oh, that's right.
I think we missed Humpty Dumpty when we were listing them. But yeah.
And that's the reason he fell off the wall because he was laughing at the baby's ears.
At the baby. Yeah. That's a clever bit there. But mm-hmm. While he's on that island, because it turns out Happy is on that island, he meets the three bears and he kind of does the whole Goldilocks bit, but he befriends the baby bear.
Yeah.
And so then they play like Knights and Dragons, which I thought was kind of a cool thing. I believe it's also Red Skelton.
It's Red Skelton doing the voice. Doing the baby voice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's they play a Knights and Dragons where he has to slay the dragon. And then as part of his celebration, he's got to take off his helmet or his hat. Mm-hmm. And of course he doesn't want to. And I love how the little bear gets so obsessed with, you got to play by the rules. You're not doing it right. You got to play a game right. And the narration comes in and says,
yep.
And the baby realized that yes, if he was going to play a game, he needed to follow the rules. And so he's like working on this internal shame or whatever, that's got to make him do this thing. Yeah, it's another weird moment that kind of comes out of nowhere. Cause the narrator doesn't really, he talks a lot, but you never get this sort of like reasoning for why baby is doing stuff, and then all of a sudden here he is doing this, and sure enough pops off his hat and everybody laughs at him.
And so he runs away.
Yeah.
But it is weird because it's Father Time doing the narration.
Yeah,
you know? So I mean, it's just strange to have him saying things here and there and then, you know, everybody acting it out, but I don't know what it is. It's just
Yeah, the logic's really weird because he starts off telling the story of what's going to happen, mm-hmm. but then he's also in the story, still telling you what's happening in that moment. So now he's not in the future looking back at the past. Now he's in the present telling this. And also, yeah, so that's another place where if you really tried to be careful about how all this stuff works, it doesn't line up, which is what makes it fun.
Yes, and thank you. You articulated it much better than I could. So, so thank you for that. But he runs away, and of course, Rudolph and the knight and the caveman, they see Happy, and I think Eon grabs him at this point.
Is that where he's or so
no,
full
he
of...
he grabs him in 1776.
Oh, that's right. Yep. So they see him there, and then he takes him, and that's where they see him again over the water. Mm-hmm. They see Eon there. Big Ben decides to shoot out a big...
From his blowhole. Yeah.
And so then he drops the baby, which again, Rudolph freaks out and he's like, he dropped him. And I'm like, just go fly.
Yeah, you can fly, man.
Right. But they just watch him. But then all of a sudden his hat works like a parachute and he floats away on the wind for apparently 24 hours, right? Like they say that it lasted a whole day that he was flying in the wind, which was an odd detail to throw in there, that the baby's holding onto his hat for dear life for a day.
Although, you know, my daughter, she's almost two, so she's about 4 months shy, but she does have a kung fu grip, so I can believe him holding onto that hat.
I was even thinking about, like, have you seen those pictures of, like, newborn babies where they have the grip?
Yep.
And the grip reflex. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's it, right? He just had the grip reflex on the hat, and so he was just holding on. Yeah. So,
which really totally makes me wonder, how old is Happy? You know, I mean, what kind of baby?
Happy enough. I mean, old enough apparently to feel shame and disappointment and other people and, you know, broken friendships and things like that.
Yep. But,
yeah. But he can't walk really. He's still got to crawl.
He still crawls and he doesn't speak yet.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe 8 months. I don't know.
Hard to see. I got obsessed at, and I rewatched it a couple times trying to figure, because there's one little montage where they show a baby time growing up into the old father into time, the and father they have time. And they have the different months there. And I was trying to figure out, like, okay, because it's like he goes baby, toddler, young man, mm-hmm. and then he jumps to middle age really fast.
Yeah.
And then he's old for a long time too. So yeah, again, I was spending way too much time trying to actually see which month would account for which version of a person. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, stuff like that, those little details, it's really what makes or breaks a special. And, you know, in this case, they're just crazy, but I mean, they're really interesting as well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I get it. I completely get it.
And this one, I mean, I know I keep saying it's weird and whatnot, but I really like it because they spend, even though they break all the rules of the world, they actually spend a lot of time like creating details.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the sets in this are really, really quite detailed compared to some others, like especially when they're in the fairy tale land. There are some scenes where there's some real depth to the sets for these things that in a lot of times Rankin Bass shows don't really get. Like usually it's more like a stage where there's something right there, but there are some things here. Like I remember the little piece, and it's just for the seven dwarves, I think, that you don't even see the dwarves, and it's like 15 seconds at most of this thing. And there's a ton of detail in this forest setting and the little, like there's a picnic place before you see the house that the dwarves live in. And it's really amazing the work they did for this tiny little throwaway shot.
Yeah. I wish that they hadn't shut down, because I would have liked to have seen what they could do like nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, when you see stuff like, what is it? The Corpse Bride and the Nightmare Before Christmas. And you see how advanced that is. I mean, I really would have loved to see what Rankin Bass could have done.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a shame, but,
I've always thought it'd be fun to see them do a Lord of the Rings, like let Peter Jackson decide. And now I'm going to do a claymation version or a stop motion version of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
I'd Rankin Bass.
I am excited for the Amazon show, but I kind of wish they had done the Silmarillion instead.
And isn't it supposed to be like stories of Aragorn? Is that
what it is?
Okay.
Which is why I would have rather have seen, you know, the founding of Arda or something like that, you know, but it is what it is.
So. Yeah.
But so they make it to the island of 1776. He meets the Ben Franklin stand-in. Mm-hmm. And he takes him to see the parade, because every day is the 4th of July on that island. And let's ignore everything else
that
happened in the year 1776.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah, it's for the whole year, but it's just for the United States.
Yeah, exactly. 1776. So here comes the 4th of July parade. And of course, the flag comes by. So he has to take off his hat. And of course, we get that whole bit again. But it's another one of those things that it's a crazy detail. And I don't know what made Romeo Muller like pick 1776, except maybe he thought, I need another way to get him to take off his hat.
Yeah. And that could have been.
What else can I do? Oh, wait, when I see a flag. Yeah, perfect. I mean, I don't know, but why he chose 1776, but I mean, I think it works. And the dynamic between, you know, Sev and OM and 1023 and Rudolph is kind of cool. You know, they're a team, but they're also like so hodgepodge and mismatched and different. And I mean, it really works, at least for me.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have seen them come out like in other specials.
Yeah. But, have a whole other. Yeah. I guess that you're working on that kind of. Yeah, you're working on a crew of Avengers for Rankin Bass at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bring in Frosty, and then you got you have Rudolph and Frosty. So they have their own thing, right? Isn't it?
They do. Yeah.
Rudolph and Frosty in July. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yep. Yeah. And Santa as well. But yeah, I mean, I think it would have been cool if they had explored some of those a little bit more, or even like a spinoff show or something. Cause, you know, they did a few shows with like the Daydreamer and Willie McBean and things like that. So I think it would have been neat to just take these three disparate characters and, you know, put them all together. And
yeah. Even if you're going to do a holiday thing, like the islands already give you a way to kind of do a holiday deal. Yeah. I mean, you could go back to the year zero and you could have Easter or whatever, you know, or I guess a different Christmas or whatever, you know? Yeah, so it's,
But anyway, so of course they get there too late. They see Happy being snatched up by Eon, and he takes him to the Island of No Name, which is like, I guess his crib or something. And so they follow him there, and that's where they're trying to climb up, and we get, you know, that whole bit with an avalanche and
right. And the other little detail there that I love is this is Eon's last day to live, right? Mm-hmm. Unless this works out, and he's taking a nap. Right. He's up there, he's sleeping in the day, and they're climbing up the mountain trying to be quiet. But it only hit me this time. I'm like, hey, he's taking a nap. He's about to die, but he's taking a nap.
Well, so, he's got the baby.
Well, so I guess he's got the baby. Yeah. So it could be. Still, it seems like if I was him, I'd want to wait until midnight just to be sure. But
yeah. Although it does kind of beg the question, why didn't he just like kill the baby?
I mean, if
you're worried about this baby replacing Father Time and starting a new year, I mean, why not? Yeah. Just get rid of him. But
yeah. All he does say at one point, right? Like, you're going to be my slave forever. Right. That's always the thing that gets the evil villain. Right. Like, they always want to have somebody to prove that they're in power. And that comes back to bite them so many times.
They just needed to be hugged more when they were little.
But yeah. And then there's the weird detail there that they all became, again, in the way that the logic of the show always gets a little more complicated than you think it would need to be. The avalanche doesn't just roll them down the mountain and further away and wake Eon up where he could just fly away. Instead, it turns them all into snowballs because they get covered in snow. And therefore, the only way that they can get out of that is because Rudolph can make his nose glow and melt the snowball. Mm-hmm. So it's that extra detail. And it works perfectly for why Rudolph alone is the hero and whatnot.
Of course.
But I just love how it gets a little more complicated at every step.
So it's funny because I sell Christmas lights for a living.
Oh, cool.
And it's pretty neat. All we do is LED, and so of course they don't get hot at all. So that means Rudolph's nose is definitely incandescent. You know, one of those old fashioned ones where you can like warm your hands around the bowl because it melts snow. So Rudolph is able to get to Happy, and he kind of, as we mentioned earlier, he explains to him that, you know, people, they laughed at me too, but I kind of turned that weakness into a strength, and it doesn't bother me anymore. And so he's like, go ahead, take off your, you know, we're friends, take off your hat. And so he laughs. And of course, Happy right away starts to feel down. He's like, no, but that's just like, I'm just so full of happiness. It just wants to get out. Whatever, Rudolph, whatever, you know. He's a baby. Yeah. He won't get it. It's fine. But
that's the one thing I love, that it's like, no, the reason people are laughing is because you've shown them something wonderful and they're so overwhelmed with joy that it has to be expressed. You know, like, now you're just lying to the kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I thought he was going in a different direction. Like, yeah, people laughed at me. Look at my nose, but you got to be strong, man. You got to get over it. But instead, no, it's like, imagine that they all really just really love you and they really are just laughing with you.
But you could say things like that to kids. They don't know any better.
Right.
So I guess there's a little bit of realism there.
Yeah. But that was the one moment where I was thinking that it kind of broke down the whole, like, if there was going to be a moral message of like, don't make fun of people, because the way he goes is totally not how you should deal with that. It's like, it's not about like, you know, getting stronger or having some self-esteem or something. It's just, no, just believe that they really love you all the more because of it.
So, exactly. Yeah. But it works. And of course, Eon wakes up, sees Happy, and you know, he starts laughing so much that, I mean, how can he possibly die when he's, you know, he's got all that warmth and fuzziness inside. So his heart, he couldn't turn to snow or ice or whatever because he's so warm.
I mean,
it's such a weird ending. I mean, there had to have been a different way, you know, like maybe give him like a grain of sand from like the hourglass or magic hourglass. I don't know. There's something, but it's such an odd thing. But at the same time, it's so like quintessentially Romeo Muller. You know, it matches with like all his other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a sentimental way to get to the
exactly. Yeah. Just kind of like how when, you know, Bumble doesn't really die because Bumble's bounce and now Bumble's he's a good bounce. Guy.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yep.
It's the same kind of thing.
And hey, we pull out all his teeth. So he's good now. He's
right. Right.
He's not going to try to gum any elves to death.
Right.
But yeah, so Rudolph thinks he's cured forever. And then Big Ben, you know, his tail is I don't remember if it strikes midnight or it's almost at midnight, but essentially Santa's there and he snatches them all up and takes them back to Father Time. And we, you know, hey, it's happy ending for everybody.
Yeah. And I do like the added thing that Father Time doesn't die at the end of the year, right? Like he goes off and lives forever in his own little island is apparently what they say, which, so at least you don't even have to worry about Red Skelton.
Exactly. Which kind of makes me wonder, like, who's he going to take with him? Like, how is the island populated? You know, because it'll be, I assume, 1776, I suppose, or 1775, or 1975.
What happens if you're one of those people who has to, like, celebrate July 4th every day for eternity?
Oh, man. Is that your purgatory? Or
I don't know.
But yeah, so that you're right. That's a cool little bit. And of course, I mean, this one to me, it's definitely more of a New Year's special than a Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
But they do tie in Christmas a lot because they retell Rudolph. They sing the song.
Yep.
Santa comes out. But at the same time, I mean, it's definitely about the new year.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, that's why my family and I like to watch it, you know, closer to New
Year's.
That's
cool. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And it's weird because a lot of the stuff that they did later, like the Leprechaun show or even Jack Frost, like they start to get kind of tangentially related to Christmas. Mm-hmm. But so this one, they just finally did a different holiday, which seems better, seems more appropriate.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen like just more holiday specific. Like I think the Leprechaun's Christmas Gold would have been perfect for just a St. Patrick's Day special.
Yeah, I've always wondered why they didn't do that. Like why was it? Unless it was just the, you know, the executives and the marketing polk at the network were like, no, we need another Christmas show from Rankin Bass. Yeah.
Yeah. Could be. I mean, honestly, that sounds like very, very plausible.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think it would have been cool to see like a Valentine's show or another Halloween, you know, a Halloween one instead.
Yeah.
Because I know they had a Thanksgiving one, I think. And then they had a few Easter ones. But
yeah, the Easter ones I remember. I don't remember the Thanksgiving one. I got to look that up. Now. I'll have to go find it.
The mouse on the Mayflower?
Oh, that's right. Yep. That's right. I'd forgotten about that one.
Yeah. But I just think it would have been cool to see some other holiday ones by them. I mean, we kind of see Halloween a little bit in Peter Cottontail.
Yeah.
But
And we did kind of get our July 4th special.
I guess we got Mad Monster Party.
Yeah, that would work for that's Halloween-ish.
Yeah. But yeah, of course, you know, they're like, have a happy new year. And then of course Rudolph adds, and may it be shiny too.
Yeah. Wink, wink. Yeah.
Throw it in. Yeah. Just two on the nose. Ba-dum-psh. Yeah. So this has been shown pretty steadily on ABC Family. Although I think the last year or two, it was on AMC. They ended up taking over a lot of stuff. When Freeform, not ABC Family, they changed a couple of years ago. They, I don't know, something with contracts. And so AMC kind of took over, but I think Freeform's actually getting it back this year. Although I'm not sure for certain, but.
Very cool. I got to admit, I've gotten away from sort of even watching like the ABC Family stuff. Like I'm so on demand, just like I'll watch my disc or I'll pull it up on
which
the other
is pretty
thing.
Much what we do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. It's only if there's one that I don't have that I'll actually tune in for that.
Yeah,
because there's a few that I don't have. The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus I actually don't own, which is
a
shame. But
did that one ever come out on DVD?
I think it did come out on DVD.
Okay.
I don't recall. I mean, I know it for sure. It has not come out on Blu-ray or anything like
that. Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I'd really like to see that one remastered. You know,
just
gone through some sort of remastering process. I think it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know I have. I mean, honestly, I've got the old VHS cassette, but then I have a digital copy that I know I got back from the Napster days, even.
Nice.
I remember it had been downloaded, and I have that. It's on a DVD now. That's what I watch if I want to watch that one.
That's cool. I know the whole thing is also on YouTube.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, most of them you can find either YouTube or Daily Motion or Vimeo or something like that.
Yeah, so things like that. But, you know, I try to own them if I can.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wish more of them were on Blu-ray or 4K, I guess, now, whatever.
Right.
Whatever it is. I don't even know. But
yeah, I'm surprised. They're so popular. I'm surprised Rankin-Bass hasn't just come out with a full thing of all of their stuff, because there are a ton of people who would get them.
Oh yeah,
imagine.
Yeah. I'd pay a lot of money for it.
Because I mean, every year they like repackage the same ones
in slightly
different ways, mm-hmm. and there would be so many people who would love to see all of them. I mean,
and I know a lot of it has to do with rights issues.
That's what I imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because there's I believe all the ones up until 74, 75 are the ones that actually are owned by one company, and then someone else owns all the rest.
Gotcha.
And so, just trying to get it all worked out, I guess, is just more than they want to do, which is, I hate when things like that get in the way. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. That's just the completist in me. So,
but it's definitely one I think you can watch, honestly, at any time. Like, it's not one, like, if you're someone who feels like you can only watch Christmas things around Christmas, this one doesn't have enough of a Christmas, unless just actually seeing Rudolph feels too Christmassy for you. Otherwise, it's just a good surreal romp at any time.
Yeah. And I've even watched it like in May before, you know, mm-hmm. May and June, and not even, you know, Christmas in July. I just felt like watching it. So I threw it on, kind of a thing. But which I find, especially this year, I found a lot more that I needed as much Christmas and craziness as I can get, which is kind of bad when, you know, a Rankin-Bass special seems sane compared to the craziness of the world.
Yeah.
But I have to ask, Craig, what would you say is your happiest, like, memory or moment of this special, you know?
This one is if I'm going to get all sentimental, it's like I said, my oldest son really liked it when he was little, and he would sing the songs and, you know, and he didn't care. He just liked Rudolph. Like, he wasn't paying attention to all the stuff that I liked in it, but just seeing him have fun with it and just sing the little songs. I mean, as both my boys are now older and one looks like a man and another one, you know, is just about to be there. It's fun mm-hmm. to remember those little boy times. So that's my warm, fuzzy memory of that one.
Right on. Yeah. But, I hate to sound like I'm copying, but that's pretty much mine too. Just sitting down and watching it with my kids, and just, you know, their eyes wide and their mouth, you know, mm-hmm. their jaw dropped. It just, I mean, it's great. And knowing that, you know, they like the Rudolph and the stuff that I kind of like is there's something to be said about that. And so I quite thoroughly enjoy it. So, but now we come to my favorite part of the podcast, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. So this is where we do our best impressions of our least favorite part. It can be anything from, you know, a cringeworthy piece of dialogue or, you know, maybe some bad production design, you know, things like that. But as the guest, I'll let you go first, just kind of set up the scene, and then we'll throw it out to the listeners and they can vote. And the winner gets a totally rad Christmas sticker, unless I win, in which I get nothing.
So I'll do this.
So far, I have not won, so you're good.
Good. Well, I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, because this is actually a 10-3 thing. There's one moment when they think they've lost Baby Happy again, and they're on the boat, and it's sort of like each character is having their moment of despair so that Rudolph can come in and be the positive
cheer everybody up. Mm-hmm.
But 10-3 is sitting there and he's sort of choked up, and it's only like three words, but he goes, it's hopeless. and it's this total scene chewing screaming of one word. And yeah. It's even kind of hard to tell if he's saying hopeless or helpless or, and I think it's, is it actually helpless that he's saying, I think?
I thought it was hopeless. Honestly.
I thought so too. But then I think Rudolph comes in and says, no, we're not helpless. So yeah, I don't know
maybe.
If they decided
I think
to change,
he does say that.
But it does sound more like hopeless than helpless. Well, so that's definitely the moment for me that really is, it kind of takes you out of it too. Cause you're like, that is an extremely loud screamed word. So,
well, if we get to see Frank Gorshin in the afterlife, we'll have to ask him. So for me, it was, so, you know, Rudolph has been told about how people were making fun of Happy by Father Time. And I thought this part was kind of ridiculous. It's the only line that really made me cringe. And he says, and I'm going to try to do my best Billy May Richards here, although I'm probably going to fail. But he says, I bet they called him names and wouldn't let him play in any New Year's games.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah. It's like, good callback. Good callback.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, maybe in the hands of a more seasoned writer, right. That could have been handled. But yeah, I think it was hard to find a spot that I really disliked. Just it's so fun and crazy, and that I kept wondering like what's going to happen next. You know, the very when I saw it again after all those years, and it's just I love it. I really do.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, me too.
Right on. But I have to ask, G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. So what would you say is the other half?
It seems like you're getting for this one set up to, you know, have some message about, you know, self-esteem or don't care what other people say about, you know, if they laugh at you or something like that. But it's really not that at all. Like if there's a message to this show, then it's not that knowing is half the battle. It's that you just believe Rudolph's insane optimism and all things in the world will randomly turn out good.
That's, you know what? It's true though. It's very true. Well, it's better than mine. Mine is if knowing is half the battle, the other half is using a whale clock to navigate an archipelago is the best way to travel.
Yeah. Works out to the same thing, I think. That's pretty much what I said.
I think you're right. So, Craig, it's been so much fun talking with you and just, you know, getting to experience your love for the special as well. But I got to ask, what do you want to plug?
Well, the next season, I only do the podcast from about Thanksgiving to New Year's ish, every year. So I'm not a year round thing. So, you know, props to you for being able to do this, even though it's 90 degrees outside.
Yes.
But yeah, so I've got a lot of fun stuff this year, a bunch of writers. Every year I have a bunch of listeners help me read and narrate, an old Victorian ghost story. And I have to pick that one. So that'll be one of my episodes. And then I'll be asking around for helpers again. And I also do a big short story contest or a flash fiction contest, which this will be the third year I'm doing it. And you can enter if you want to, 350 words, anything about any winter holiday that's weird. And that can be scary, creepy, weird, or funny, weird, with actual cash prizes. All the details are up weirdchristmas.com. But we do a whole show. I publish all those on the site, I publish about 10 to 12 on the site, sort of the two winners and some honorable mentions. But I've had some really just great stuff the last couple of years, like more than I expected to get, more actual just numbers of entries, but also just way higher quality things than I ever thought I would get. That's actually the highlight every year. So I get to talk to people I like, some writers like Al Ridenour, who's book on Krampus is really cool. I got to chat with him. There's a new book coming out on the history of Santa. Tom German, who I'm talking to, and a couple other things. A couple other interviews that'll be fun. But that contest is really the big thing. So if you're interested in writing something, go check out weirdchristmas.com. And even if you're not, just look out for that episode. If you only listen to one of mine, that one is great because you will hear some wonderful, wonderful stuff. every year.
And I got to say, I've read a couple of those COVID Christmas stories. And those have been very entertaining.
They're strange. Yeah. Those have kind of gone into the dark already. So yeah, the pretty dark side of things. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. But that's great. That's great. I'm glad you're having fun with those. That when I asked some of the people who dinner stories before, if they wanted to just send me something about COVID and the holidays, and I threw it up there. So yeah, hopefully, yeah, I got a few more coming and that'll be good.
Cool.
But, yeah. Otherwise, Thanksgiving is when it comes out. So,
and on social media, where can they find you?
Just search Weird Christmas on anything. It's okay. The other big thing I do is I share strange old Victorian cards all through the season, and I have thousands and thousands of them, and I try to find stranger and stranger ones every year, and I just have a constant feed of those. Well, now almost all year long, but definitely they speed up during the year. So Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, take your pick. Just search Weird Christmas and you'll find it.
Very cool. And yeah, the ones that always get me are the frogs. I don't know what the deal is with frogs, but yeah, they're
I don't know. And that's the weirdest one. The weirdest card that always gets shared the most is, I just started calling it Frog Murder Christmas. And it's an image of one frog who just killed another frog who's lying bleeding on the ground. And he's running off with a bag of gold. And underneath it, it says, a very Merry Christmas. And it's a legit Victorians card.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's legit. That one always people get me and thought, why did you Photoshop that? I'm like, it's a true, honest card. It's in collections. Because I collect the physical things too. If I could find that, I would pay any amount of money to have actual card. I know some people who do have it, but I would love to do it. But it is absolutely real.
That's crazy.
But you know, congratulations to you for starting up this thing and getting it going.
Because
you've got a lot a lot of people have been on, and it's fun, and it's fun to listen to, and you get a lot of good stuff. And congrats for keeping it going so much too.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's the hard part.
I don't
part.
Know how long I can keep it going since it's only about the 80s, but I'm gonna see what I can do.
Just remember the long decade, just little 70s, a little 90s in there too.
Yep, exactly. You know, where it was almost the 80s, or where, you know, it's not quite 90s yet. But there's an episode of How I Met Your Mother where they talk about Robin Sparkles. I don't know if you ever watched that show.
I've watched some of it, but I don't remember that one.
Yeah. So Robin, turns out she was like an 80s pop star, but in the 90s in Canada.
Yeah.
And so she has this bit where she says the 80s didn't come to Canada till 1993. So.
That's awesome.
But on that note, again, Craig, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this, you know, talking with you, but I'm going to end it by saying, if Santa can travel all over the world in one night, you ought to be able to check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like you can stop time so that a big giant bird doesn't turn to ice and snow, then leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.